You're listening to Mind Over Markets, a podcast on trading psychology to help you build a bulletproof mindset. Here's your hosts, George Papazov and Mark Borscht.
Hello, trade pros, and welcome to today's podcast. In this episode, we're going to be interviewing a really exciting guest. His name is Brad Alcini. Brad was a consultant to Rand Squawk, a professional live news audio for traders in prop firms around the world, and is now a shareholder of this business. Brad, Mark, and myself go into the depths of what it's like to be a professional trader. Having started from the trading pit and working his way to electronic trading, Brad, Mark, and I discuss a number of very exciting topics, including how big traders stay alive, what's required to be successful in this business, and examples of seven-figure traders and what they do to win. Plus, I asked Brad the question, what would you need to see in a trader to provide them your capital to trade? And what's one thing you would absolutely not want to see? It's a phenomenal discussion, and let's jump right into it. Brad, thank you for taking time of your busy day, and welcome to the show.
Thanks, George. Thanks, Mark. I appreciate you guys having me. Let's see. Geez, the quick intro and kind of, I guess, from when I started to where I am now. Graduated from college, came to Chicago. By 95, I was in Chicago, clerking on the floor of the Board of Trade, Chicago Board of Trade. In the Treasury complex, where the all the twos, fives, tens, and 30-year bond futures are traded. Got my first trading job with Goldenberg Haymeyer. They were an FCM, and they had customer business and proprietary trading side of the business. So I started trading prop for Goldenberg Haymeyer. That was early 1996, and I traded from 96. All the way through February 2001. I was at Goldenberg Haymeyer for a year trading treasuries, mainly floor-based. Toward the end of that first year at Goldenberg Haymeyer, I started trading electronically on what the system was at the Board of Trade, which was called Project A, which is equivalent to what Globex was in terms of electronic for the CME. Board of Trade had a electronic trading platform called Project A. I was doing that, trading. I was part of that group that could, we had our trading jackets on and we could run from the 10-year note pit and be, if we were long one 10-year note, for example, we could, run up after the session and go to the screen and sell that 10-year note and we'd be flat. So fungible from pit to screen. And then from there, started seeing opportunities, at nighttime with what was happening in the German market. The yield curve there. And then that jumped me kind of after that year, I went on my own and, started self-cleared at Gelber. Gelber, I guess a lot of people probably would know that name. He was, had an FCM, proprietary trading and customer business like Goldenberg Haymeyer. Now the owner, Brian Gelber, he's, it's all prop, no more customer business in there. Gelber's just all proprietary trading. But I was in there and I started to trade at night. I was focusing on these night markets primarily from midnight until 8 a.m. kind of thing, where I'm trading the German curve or trading US stuff off of what the German curve was doing. And I was doing both. I was trading US curve and German stuff. The German stuff, as you can imagine, with the primary market at night, was very influential in our interest rate market. Just a lot of good opportunities there. So that worked out really well. I was able to coincidentally get to meet somebody that was in Chicago, and that relationship. This individual was trading for Transmarket Group, and the owner of that firm was Ray Kahneman, a very well-known guy in Chicago. Real good trader, and I was able to learn. I went from outright trading. Once I got to Gelber, I was starting to trade. Start spread trading. And this guy that I became friends with, I said, listen, he was about to get out of his deal, which he was able to do at Transmarket Group and get paid out. Did that. And then after, that was all done, he came and I said, hey, come to this office. I have an office in Gelber. And we became kind of friends. He was a few years younger than me. He was a high level tennis player, ended up going to school at Princeton, a real bright guy. And from day one, when he started trading, he was one of those kids that just kind of took off, never really drew down much, and just started making some really good money. And then he started telling me about these opportunities, he was the guy that I mentioned to you before offline, George, where, you know, he said, I said, you know, we were comparing about how big we trade and so on and so forth. And he said, yeah, well, you know, in terms of winning and losing and then the size we traded. And he explained that he doesn't really pretty much never loses. And once he told me that and he was telling about the spread based stuff, I said, that sounds interesting. So as an outright guy, of course, it's hard to make money every night. But in that spread world and the stuff that he was doing, he was able to really put, gosh, a lot of wins and just go weeks and weeks and weeks without having a losing day. And so I learned how to start relationship-based trading. And then from there, you know, so I was trading 10 years in the bond. So I was doing knobs, and then I was doing the shats against the bobble. So the 2 against the 5-year German, and I was doing the 10s against the bonds and the U.S. stuff and looking and pricing in cash, using cash treasury bonds to price, good prices to get in and out, and looking at a lot of things. Had access to cash treasuries too, which was nice at Gelber, and it's you know, worked out well. Fast forward from there, it's by February 2001. I knew a guy that was, you know, some of the software I was using, trading technology software, TT, as everyone, you know, pretty much knows it today. The guy that was the big angel investor, a guy by the name of Harris Brumfield, is somebody I knew from the 10-year note pit. He had a relationship. And he became, like I said, a large angel investor to Trading Technologies. He said, Brad, I need another, you know, some more sales guys, because we're going to start to, you know, become kind of the software of choice for as this all becomes electronic at the Board of Trade and CME. The timing was right. I knew the software. He was really had a great position in terms of what he was doing in terms of innovating the software. Everybody knows now the vertical market up trader ticket. That was, you know, Harris had patents around the vertical market up trader ticket. The price is static in the middle, and then the bids and offers moving up and down. So I jumped into that. I said, okay, I'll leave trading, and I got into the other side of the business, and I did that for 5 years at Trading Technologies. We had a lot of growth, big growth during that time. And by February of 2006, I got into this news aggregation business, which was kind of, you know, all the proprietary trading firms that use TT software. As you can imagine, we pretty much had everybody. So, you know, what I did was, okay, that started to flatten out like everything does in life. And I was able to, I heard about this Rand Squawk and these guys that started a small little niche business out of London through a partner that I had. I was running a CPO as well when I left Trading Technologies. And so that partner, we were running a CPO, commodity pool operator, which is like a hedge fund in the futures and options space. And then also doing consulting to this business called Rand Squawk. So what happened there was we were doing both there. My partner and I ended up splitting up. My partner went to become COO of a pretty well-known proprietary trading firm in Chicago. And then I took over the consultancy business with Rand Squawk. That is now called New Squawk as of November 2019, that I'm now a shareholder in, and been with that business, I guess that was like 2008 to current. So, and we provide, you know, as you know, we provide information to, we're kind of eyes and ears for active trading, and we have an analyst desk, and they get to, you know, we kind of make sure people for all sessions, European, US and Asia Pac, we're giving information to the ears of traders just to make sure that they can kind of focus on the screens and hear information to the ear and help people out that way. So yeah, that's in a nutshell. That's what I've done to here where I am now at 48 years old.
I know you had a very long career, and, you know, it's fascinating to get a chance to have you on the podcast and for the listeners to, you know, to listen to somebody who's pretty much been in this business on the professional side from the get-go. So what I wanted to kind of explore a little bit further, so I'm sure a lot of the listeners are also interested, is to take your career and go through the progression of it as it relates to trading, and then ask you some questions that some of our listeners could learn from you from. And so I wanted to start out, if you don't mind, from, you know, starting in the pit. Like, when you first joined the pit trading and you were on the floor for the very first day, you know, what was the psychology like being a new person on the floor and finding your way through, you know, through all the information, finding a way to sort of make it work for you? And what were some of those challenges associated with it? I know it's a loaded question, so take your time.
Problem. Well, first of all, I would say it was pretty intimidating, right? So you have the floor of the Chicago Board of Trade at that time, all pit traded at the time, right? So as you know, the transition was like 2002-ish, 2002, 2003 is when people started to migrate really to screen-based trading. So when we're talking 96, we're talking about, all the financials, twos, fives, tens, and 30-year bond futures. These pits were packed. Very, very substantial traders in these pits that were willing to take a lot of size all day long, taking the other side of major banks every day, all day. And I had to get in there, and it's just, making your first trade your first wood lot. You got your jacket on, you got your badge on. I mean, you know the R because you're down there, so you know how to communicate and trade with your hands because you've been down there as a clerk and you know how to do that. But it's kind of, it's nerve wracking. So, I ended up, starting to trade. I got in the mid-am. The mid-am is a bastard child of the 30-year bond pit where it's like a half contract size type thing, but it's essentially trading the bond. And, I was in there and able to do it. And I just, just started trading one lots. I mean, that's all I was doing in there. And I wasn't trying to do too much and just had my little game plan every day, go through my, what was going on in the markets, do my research, follow my stuff, fundamental, technical, and just staying, trying to stay alive, okay, for the first few months as opposed to dying. I mean, meaning blowing an account out, not being able to make it. So really that's all it is at the beginning. And then also, and I mentioned before that, seeing, learning from people that are doing it right. So I got to see personalities of people, and I've kind of mentioned to you offline, the two types of people, and I think all the exchange floors, and it relates to now, which is a good thing to relate now, is that you have people that were spread traders and you have people that trade direction or outright, as we would say. And I got to see the personality types between those two groups are, definitely different types of people. And I was able to learn from observation and having relationships with a lot of people down there about what path I wanted to take.
That's awesome. I think that's really fascinating. One of the points that you mentioned there that really stood out to me is the idea of starting small, right? We endorse that a lot at Trade Pro Academy. It's like, no matter what business you were in prior to starting to trade, I think it's a new business and you should approach it with a small mindset while you sort of learn and feel your way around. So just wondering, starting small, what is the one thing that maybe helped you succeed to scale up from there? Because it could be intimidating. It's very daunting, especially in this day and age where you have all this information online. So what was the one thing that you would say that got you over the hump to be able to scale up from there while you're in the pit?
Yeah, I think having a game plan every day, going in with a clear head, and being able to just succeed and make money and put days together where you're making money as opposed to losing money, simply put. Okay. Right. So if you're a new trader and you already have these butterflies and people are looking at you, who's this guy, that you are in there able to at least, feel good about yourself at the end of the day where, you were making some money. Right. So, whether I was making $150 or, having $1,000 a day, whatever. Right. To feel like I'm making money. Right. As opposed to, trading each day and having and consecutively losing day after day, you're going to have losing days when you're trading outright in direction like I was doing at the beginning. But again, it's just sitting there and being patient, trying to find that edge. Where's the edge? And that's the thing you're trying to always figure out until this day. That's what trading is, right? Where is your edge as a trader? And if you can't identify where that is, then, you got problems, I would say. Yeah. So, and it's hard, it's definitely hard. So I guess the answer to your question, I guess, is just winning. I was able to just have small wins at the beginning. Of course I had some losing days, but just in general, feeling good about saying, hey, I can be down here with these pros and hang. I'm not, top of the food chain down there is very, very substantial traders. Guys that, like I told you before, swinging multiple seven figures in a week, could be up or down 2 or 3 million per week. They've been doing that for 19 or 20 years. And those guys definitely are positively skewed in terms of, you would be very interested in their tax returns. As I'd say, but yeah, so hard, but those guys were good. They were good. They had a system. They were disciplined. They repeated behavior and they knew what was going on. You know, so I had to try to observe and look and watch and see personalities of people and how they behaved to see what, where these winners were. And I could see where the losers were. You know, you could see guys that weren't doing well. You could just see it. You know, you see them after walking off the trading floor, you know, shoulders shrugged, you know, down and out, you know, that as opposed to people that were doing it right. You know, it's almost like being an athlete. You know, you knew it's like having an athletic background. People, you know, you could see winners and losers just by their nonverbal and how they held themselves.
Yeah. Brad, I wanted to kind of circle back. You mentioned something when you started in the pits. You mentioned that you originally started with trying to stay alive, right? You mentioned trying to stay alive was my main goal. Can you speak to kind of that psychology? Because I know that a lot of people, when they start in this industry, their main goal is to start making money right away, you know, jump in the pool and to swim with the sharks. But what really is interesting that you mentioned was your initial goal at the start was to try to stay alive and to not lose money. So can you just speak on that psychology of why you were focusing on not losing money as opposed to making money to start?
Yeah, I mean, so when you come from the floor, and you probably hear this, and it probably translates now to the same thing of what you guys are doing, guys, with in terms of getting people that are new in trading, is that we would say a scratch is a winner, right? So what does that mean, right? A scratch is a winner. It means, you know, you buy twos and you sell twos. Well, you don't make any money. You scratched. But that's a winner. Well, that's kind of weird. That's not a winner. And, you know, what do you mean it's a winner? It's a scratch. You're not making any money, but you're not losing, but it's not a winner. Well, when you first start off in trading, it is a winner. Because if you're just in a trading pit and things are happening, okay, and you buy twos and sell twos, you accomplish something, okay? You're using your hands. You're using that arb. You know, you bought one. You paid three for whatever you're using, right? And you're communicating and you're doing the arb and you were like, hey, I just scratched a trade. That is silly as it seems, that's actually progressing and that's what you're looking to do. And there's a lot of scratching when you're pit trading like that. You know, there are percentages and people, this is, you know, it's out there, and I don't know how you'd want to relate it to electronic trading these days, but really, really good directional pit traders at that time. And this is back of the napkin numbers, guys, but like, you know, roughly, you know, 60%, 70% of their trades were scratches. I mean, these are people that are taking down a lot of size and they're just processing paper, right? They're just, so over time, they don't care if they're scratching that much because with the size that they're trading, you know, if they're scratching 80% of the time, when they're able to make money, take a tick on 100 lot, there's, you know, that's over $3,000 right there on just one trade for people that start to pick up their size. You know, you convert a few times. I mean, you start, you know, three and six, you know, you're talking multiple, you know, big days for anybody that would be working in any job. And so that was an edge, right? We're able to buy twos. If you can buy twos and sell threes or buy twos and scratch twos, that's where you want to be all day. You want to take the other sides of those trades, right?
Yeah, I think that's a very fascinating piece of information, because at Trade Pro Academy, we endorse the same ideology, right? It's like, The power of the scratch is enormous, especially at the beginning. Because think about it, you put capital on and you take capital off and you look at the book and the ledger and there's no profit. However, there is a learning out of that, right? You get a chance to be immersed, you get a chance to experience the psychology, the emotions, especially at the beginning without taking any risk. I think that's a free education lesson. And not everyone could say that they have an opportunity to get free education. And another thing I find that, I don't know if you would want to speak on this as well, Brad, but I find that it takes away the need, the necessity to be right, right? No one in the market knows when they're going to be right. We just know there's an opportunity that's worth a risk. Let me take a shot. And, you know, looking for that certainty is, I think, misleading in the sense. So I find that starting small and then scratching your way is like, you become successful through not blowing your account or not losing. At the beginning, it's almost a challenge of not losing versus the goal of let's get out there and make as much money as possible, right? It's like education focused. So I love that you mentioned that. So I'd like to take it to the next step. So from here in the floor, you know, you go and you have some experience in the floor, you know, you find your way around, you find the people who are the ones that you want to sort of be mentored by or follow their strategy, learn your own, etc. So how do you go from the pit and from the floor? How did you know it was time to go out on your own or to go to the next step of your career in a prop firm? Like, what was the decision behind saying, okay, I've been here, I've been successful, now it's time to move on? What was the decision moment, factors?
Well, it's interesting. My path was, my first proprietary trading job, I was, you know, predominantly pit. But even then, we had a system called Project A. Project A was the board of trade system, electronic trading system. So you could trade on a screen. Simply put, you could be long a 10-year note in the pit. The session closes. You run upstairs to your computer, throw your trading jacket over the chair, and you sell one 10-year note on Project A. You're flat. Got it? So you actually could, there was an electronic. Now most people at that time were just pit-based people. And it's interesting to me, you think more people, but we had a group of people that were pit-based people that were also screen-based. I was early to screen-based trading, and I saw the opportunity of what was going on at night because what was happening in the German interest rate market. So as you know, Eurex, the yield curve in Germany, specifically the Schatz, Babel, and Boone, was a very influential primary market during the European trading session that influenced our treasury market in big time. And the issue was staying up at night because that's like basically midnight until, 8 in the morning, Chicago time. I mean, you're just a complete night owl. And I saw that. And so it's almost like you started to, you wanted to trade around the clock because you could do your pit stuff and do all that stuff and then trade at night, but you have literally no time. You wouldn't be sleeping. You could trade. And so I was torn because I knew some guys at night that were like, Brad, they were making good money at night. They said, just quit your stuff in the day. Just focus on night stuff. It's a sacrifice. It's brutal. You don't see the sun for months on end. You turn into a vampire, but you can build up an account. And I was like, well, geez, So the transition for me was slow. I didn't do that for the first year. I was really focused on just It's after I left my proprietary trading situation and moved over to Gelber. You guys know that FCM Gelber out of Chicago has been around forever, Brian Gelber. And I funded my own account that I started to do that and realize, okay, looking at those opportunities, right? But then I also, during that time, sought out some kind of mentorship of some people, specifically one person that was a spread-based trader that I became friends with. That was a high-level tennis player, actually. He was, coincidentally, the number one player in the state of Illinois. Ended up playing tennis at Princeton. Great guy. He shared some information with me because he was at a firm I mentioned before. So he was trained by Ray Kahneman of Transmarket Group. And that whole camp of traders were all spread-based traders. And those were some of the best traders on the floor. And I knew that. And, we naturally became friends. He was a few years younger than me, but I was, certainly young at the time. And I was able to get him to come to Gelber. And I said, listen, I got this great office. He was in the process of getting out of his deal, getting cashed out of his prop deal and willing to, come over. And it worked out perfect. And he came over to Gelber and I was able to, basically see what this guy was doing. I mean, I ended up meeting this guy. And the first thing we started talking, I told him about what I was doing a little bit. And I asked him about what he was doing. And then he says to me, he goes, yeah, he goes, I don't lose. I said, what do you mean you don't lose? He says, I don't lose. He says, I make money every night. And it's every night I make money. And it turns out that, the kind of money, and then we started asking, what type of, how big you trade and what kind of money? He's like, anywhere from 10 grand to 30 grand or 10 grand to 20 grand a night. And I don't lose. He starts throwing these numbers out. I'm like, well, wait a minute. And sure enough, he ends up showing me some stuff and it was true. It was accurate. I mean, and I learned a lot, but again, it was all spread based trading. So totally different than trading directional. I was spread trading. And that's a different game. And I had to learn kind of new skill set and think differently about trading.
Brad, you mentioned something earlier on, with regards to how you kind of started trading versus where you kind of transitioned into. So you mentioned that you had started with outright trading, right? And then you switched over to the relationship style of trading. My question to you, or rather something I was kind of hoping to discuss is, the topic of finding something that matches your personality in trading and gravitating towards that. So I'm kind of curious if at any point when you started learning about relationship trading, if you found that it kind of vibed a little bit more with your personality and what made sense to you, and if that's what kind of got you to gravitate towards that.
Yeah, definitely. I think so. I let's put it this way: trading outrights, guys. I was trading outrights. You know, certainly big enough where I was moving around intraday. You know, enough money. You know, or I mean, I could swing. I don't know if it was volatile. You know, $10,000 and $20,000 and $30,000 any given day, depending on how volatile. I mean, that is not good for your health in terms of that day in, day out. And personality wise, for me, my personality type. I didn't like that as much. There were some guys I noticed that just could trade outright, huge, and swing, and it just they were so unaffected. But it was their personality type. It wasn't. I was more of a person that didn't like that direction and liked to spread trade. You got to know what fits your personality type. I mean, listen, there are some people that trade directional really well. I think you definitely need, you know, relating it to now, you can still trade direction. Listen, just with this volatility, obviously with this virus and what's going on, I mean, geez, you know, this volatility is probably not done with. There's definitely direction to trade, but you definitely need a game plan. You definitely need to trade with stops saying that, hey, you know, I mean, whatever, I'm not, you know, wherever the 10-year note is right now, what, 138.30 half I'm looking at right now. We got a 10-year note. So, I mean, you know, if you're going to buy, you know, 10-year notes right now, 138.30 half, hey, that's fine. You're long here, 138.30, because you think it's going, you know, you're looking to make, you know, you think it's positively skewed to make 5 or 10 ticks in that trade, fine. But where are you getting out? Okay. I mean, that means you're out at 138, you know, 25. Okay. You're risking 5 ticks to make 10 ticks. Okay. You know, but you have to know where you're getting out, and you need to be, you know, willing to take losses. If you want to be a good directional trader, I'll tell you, it's something that was said to me a long time ago from people, a trader that was a very, very good directional trader, made millions and millions of dollars. He said, you know, he said, Brad, people ask me what I do, and it's always so hard to explain, you know, what I do, because the money this guy was making, and it was like, you know, it was just weird at the time, right? And some of these people were making a lot of money, and you had hardworking people that were doctors or lawyers or, you know, that were making good money. And then you had some trader guy that, you know, had a $6 million a year, you know, back in, you know, whatever it was, and putting together these multiple seven-figure years, and people were like, geez, you know, what do you do? You're a drug dealer? It didn't make any sense. But this guy, he was a smart guy. He was an Ivy League guy. And he said to me, he goes, I tell people I'm a professional loss taker. And I go, what do you mean by that? He goes, well, I just tell him I lose 70 or 80% of the time, you know, all day, every day. And then, you know, at the end of the year, I make millions. And that's true, because if you're going to be a good directional trader, you basically are constantly taking these kind of, how do I say it? You're almost taking these small losses when ideas aren't working, but you're able to, you sit there and you catch these right tails, as I like to say. You know, really good outright guys, they're able to sit there and be patient and take those small losses, and then they catch these right tails, and they make really substantial money, you know, a handful of times in a year, and it defines their whole year, if that makes sense. Yeah, it's kind of, and I think that relates to more now, because you're not sitting on the floor trying to, you know, process paper all day when you trade electronically these days. But what you can do is you can sit here and try to find those positively skewed trades. And if you can sit there and put your work in, you can do it. You need to have stops. You need to take losses. If you cannot take losses trading direction, you're not going to be around very long. You're just not. Your discipline breaks down. You don't get out of losers. You know these stories. People don't get out of losers. They cannonball. What's that mean? Oh, you know, you're short. You get more short. You're long. You get more long. You're getting your dollar cost averaging. You think you're getting a great deal. No, you're getting run over, and you're going to lose a lot of money. Right? You need to know when you're wrong, and you need to get out and take the loss. Nobody likes to take a loss. If you can't take a loss, you got no business in trading. You need to take a loss. It's a very humbling game, and you need to take losses. And if the loss is big, I did not like taking a $20,000 loss, okay? But I did, because I had to survive, because I wasn't going to come back the next day if I didn't. How about that?
Yeah. I think that speaks to, you know, our discussion at the beginning where we were talking about professional traders in scratching and how important it is to scratch, because like you said, to catch that right tail kind of a all right trade, you're going to have to try it a couple of times. It's very difficult to, you know, take one trade and that's the one that, that ends up moving. So I think it's important, the fact that you mentioned, you know, scratching is such a big part of it, and that professional traders, they scratch a majority of their trades, because at the end of the day, like you said, a couple of trades a year can make that year for you, right? So having no issue taking those break evens until it actually moves, I think that's something huge that our audience will take away from this. And I kind of want to use that as a point to transition into kind of this next section here, where we want to kind of discuss a little bit on the psychology of trading more volatile markets, because that's kind of the stage where we're at in the current situation. So I just wanted to maybe start off the topic with a quick question on, you know, how would you approach trading in these kinds of volatile environments?
Yeah, well, the first thing is with a VIX that goes from, you know, from 14 to 85 VIX, right? Let's take this environment right now, right? We have a virus, we have this issue. It's right now, you know, VIX is now 40 right now, right? Today. So 14 to 85 now to 40. Okay, so are we in a high, are we in a kind of a more volatile, how do I say it? Are the markets more volatile than normal or less? Okay, well, even at 40, a VIX of 40, we're in a volatile market. Okay, so you have to identify that. And if we all can agree, okay, if someone says we're not, then I got to tell you right now, I think you're living in a different world. And I would tell you to step away from trading really fast, because you're going to get destroyed. Okay, because right now we're in a volatile market. Okay, I don't want anyone wants to argue that. I'm not going to argue it. I think you're wrong. And then we can just agree to disagree on that one. So that being said, you need to reduce your size a tremendous amount. So for example, if you're, you know, down when the VIX is at 15, if you are a, do you want me to put it into what terms? Into an S&P mini trader, into a 10-year note trader? Is that, what do you want me to put into the terms size wise?
Well, I think more people kind of get the S&P mini. So let's try the mini.
Right. Yeah. So, and I know it's not fractionalized, right? So you're forced to trade one. And one mini in this environment, as we know, right? If it moves, what, 100 points, it's what? What is that? That's a $5,000 move on one mini. And, you know, this market going up or down 100 points can happen pretty quick right now, obviously. So, but if you are a 10 lot trader, which, you know, in the mini, which is, you know, obviously a substantial trader, you would reduce your size in this environment from 10 to one or two. I mean, so which makes it hard, right? To, you know, nice to fractionalize a one lot, right? So people that do trade ones, it's like, you know, you're trading ones, you know, one, you're one lot mini trader, and now this, and you're still forced to trade one because you can't fractionalize, you know. Wait, isn't there, I should know this, but there's, didn't the CME, can't you trade a fractionalized? So how, is there volume, and is that, I don't know that contract.
So that's the micro contracts, and they're basically a tenth of the minis. So it basically reduces the risk by that amount, by a tenth.
That's a perfect example. So for everyone, just let's talk the, you know, small world of people starting off. That is a perfect example. So if you're a one lot trader at a 14 VIX, get to those micros and start trading ones or twos. I mean, you could basically be a one lot trader in those micros if you're a one lot trader at a 14 VIX, with an expansion of volatility that we're in. Does that make sense? And the thing that people don't understand is that you can be a tenth of your size with the type of volatility expansion we've seen and make as much money or more. And that's what people don't understand. The mistake that everyone can make in trading, and it's a huge mistake, is that they think this volatility is more opportunity, and then they trade bigger. That is, they size up in an expanding vol market. Get ready for an explosion. It's going to be like the 4th of July, and you're going to be the fireworks. Okay. It's going to be a blow up, and people don't understand. And if, from my background, I've seen that happen, and I've seen people do that in markets where, just to give you a long-term capital without dating myself, but I've seen the bond move, you know, 14 full points in a matter of days from stuff that happened, you know, over the years, right? And seeing markets. And I've seen guys that were big traders that just, they didn't listen to what we were talking about. And they thought it was their opportunity, you know, to have a, $25 million a year or something. And you know what? They blew up, right? So if you still trade, just reduce your size, and you can make a tremendous amount of money if your ideas are right and your approach is right. You have to back off your size. Those micros are a wonderful thing. CME, very smart for them to do, of course, because when you have volatility expansion, it's a great product for everybody getting involved in trading. And I would tell people to trade those for sure and to reduce your size.
It's extremely important as well. So we kind of endorse that message as well here, Brad, at Trade Pro. Like we constantly have discussion with new members on this. And I think that for newer members who jump in with the goal of coming in and just making a ton of money right off the hop without giving themselves enough time to kind of adapt and learn the craft, I think it's to their detriment. I have yet to see one trader who started on day one and started clapping 10 lots and has finished with any kind of success. And I think in this industry, it's not that people, people are looking to make money, but I think the problem is they're doing it the wrong way in terms of scale. I think if you could catch 1 or 2 points a day, then you could scale out with experience. But I think people are blowing their accounts out, taking the incorrect approach altogether, and I think never really giving themselves a chance to succeed, which is why this industry's got a high turnover rate. But somebody comes in, they do it by themselves in the bedroom, the corner of their room, don't seek any other information, and get themselves in a lot of trouble in days like this. So I'm very happy that you endorse the message as well with your career and background and knowledge that with high volatility, most retail traders assume they got to go bigger. But you actually scaled down, because going back to that really quotable moment you gave us is, I'm a professional loss taker. Coming from a person, who you quoted that is making $6 million a year, that's fascinating. And how do you take a professional loss? You do it on small size. You could do it 10 times. You could take a loss knowing that 100-point move won't put you in the green with one shot. So I think that's super important part of the psychology.
That's correct. A lot of discipline to do that. Easy to say, hard to do. But yes, and having access to information now with, the kind of the new world, I mean, there is access to information out there, and you need to know, how to get it at the right prices, right?
Yeah. There are old traders, there are bold traders, but there are no old bold traders, right?
that's correct. I like that one, by the way.
We discussed a little bit about transitioning the volatility in these markets. And I think it's fascinating to learn that. I think the micro has been a very innovative product that the CME's launched, because it really allows you for new traders starting in. Because I know that in this industry, from an educational background myself, and teaching thousands of traders, a lot of them used to go to currency trading for the fact that there's super high leverage, low margin requirements, currencies and options, right? Like a lot of FX traders, like, I could start a $100 account and, by tomorrow I'm going to be driving a Lambo. And they pull out a spreadsheet, and yes, the math might theoretically work if everything you do is right and you make no mistake and, you leverage all the time. Yeah. But you'd be getting away with some errors that will eventually cost you money. So I think the CME coming in with these micros, it's vital for new people to start there and prioritize learning at the beginning versus going for money. Because we have a saying at Trade Pro Academy that, making money isn't this job. The job is being a risk manager. The money comes as compensation for how well you manage risk.
Correct. I agree with that. And I'll tell you, I was thinking of something too I wanted to mention. People that are everybody that's long stock, right? So people have 401ks, at least in this country, similar in Canada, right? Where you have the equivalent of that, where your company, you allocate whatever, a few thousand dollars a year to $10,000 or $20,000 a year, depending on your wage and what you do for work, where you own stocks, right? You own the S&P 500, you own whatever it is that's structured up for you. Okay, look, take this, the here and the now. Take this volatility, right? We went from 3,400 to, what, 2,175 in those futures in the S&P 500, right? Which was, we've all seen what's happened here. We're trading, 2,850 area. It's been a nice recovery. But the big picture here is that, back to the micros or a full mini, depending on your account size of the long equity that you hold. So not what you have in cash or bonds, but just say the stocks that you are holding long term, which I'm a believer in, to hold stocks long term over time. I do think, finding that 6 or 7% annualized over time, if it's balanced, is there. Now, what's interesting is you can almost, with the futures, right, you can hedge out some of, you know, in situations like these high, these vol spikes, what there's a spread trade there. The spread trade is using micros or using one mini or using 50 minis, depending on how much money you have of savings into the future, of picking some spots to be short against your long stock portfolio. How about that? So you're not getting out, you're not getting out of your long-term stock positions, but what you're trying to do is in situations like this, maybe there are some opportunities, be selective and use those contracts to, how do I say, you know, cushion the blow of what's happening. And it makes sense. You're just, short against, you know, your long book of stock, simply put.
I love that because then you get to experience it from an institutional angle as well, right? Because that's what they're doing. They have the long Correct. Portfolio and they're defending it with the futures. And I think starting out just trying to be a scalper, like, the, you know, 100 trades a day is the most stressful approach. If you just realize that this industry who you're trading against, you know, yes, there's retail, there's a smaller fraction, but the majority is large portfolios looking to hedge. And if you can really start to notice those flows, as you can see it on the charts, you know, there's seasonal Yep. effects as well, quarter end rebalancing, all that stuff. Once you start to see that capital at play, you start to see the market at a different perspective. Because everyone wants to know, where's the institutional trader? Like, they're not going to put their hand up and identify themselves. I mean, there's a CFTC reports, but
sure,
right? And it's a good way to sort of learn the market and learn that. So I love that. That's a good easy approach for most people to try spread trading, and that is spread trading. You're spreading.
Absolutely, it is.
Fantastic, yeah. Awesome. So we wanted to take the discussion from these volatile markets. Now I want to ask you one question before we got into the new squawk discussion, because that's a whole fascinating one as well. I got some things to say also, but if you were to hire a trader right now to trade your capital, you know, what are the qualities that you would look for, you know, to give somebody your hard earned money to put to work? Like, what are the trading qualities, from the beginning of an interview, what would you ask them?
What's your Sharpe ratio? I mean, first and foremost, right? So your risk adjusted return. I mean, how much are you risking to make a targeted return, right? Here's $100,000, trading manager. You're gonna risk, $75,000 to make $50,000 for me. Oh, okay, I'll pass. That's not the type of trader I'm looking for. I'm looking for somebody, back to what you were saying, George, of, you know, in trading is, you know, how good is your risk management? Because if, you know, you're risking $25,000 to make me $50,000. Okay. And you could, you know, and you could show that you could do that. That's you're a good trader. Cause that's very, very, very hard to do. Right. There's a reason why, right? The best trading managers in the world, very few are beating the S&P year in, year out. You know, oh, you think, oh, well, how's that? I mean, the S&P 500, people talk about these returns. Oh, I'm making 6,000% and all this stuff in the best trading managers in the world. I'll say it again. There's not many that beat the S&P 500 over long periods of time. Why do you think that is? Because it's that hard. So yes, it's easier to do if you're trading smaller amounts of money. I understand that, right? It's hard if you hand someone $20 billion. Here, George, here's $20 billion. Can you give me, I'm looking for a 10% annualized return on $20 billion, or I hand you $50,000 and I'm looking for a 10%. Obviously, it's much harder to move around huge dollars. Okay, we all understand that. Even people that are retail people in trading, I think, would understand that concept. But I would to answer your question, I mean, what's your risk management look like? You know, are you looking for that defined edge? Is your system, the way you trade, is it robust? Is it, you know, that's what I'm looking for. That's what I would be looking for sure.
That's awesome. And on the flip side, you know, I only ask this because I think as traders, we're doing quite simply the hardest job in the world. There's a saying, it's the hardest, easiest money I've ever made.
Yeah.
Right. And yeah. And I love that saying because it's a hard job. It takes a lot to get to the point that you're consistently green, and it's a constant fight, right? So what is a quality that you would say on the flip side to that, that you would kind of be like, no, there's not a chance I'd even entertain this. Like, what are some characteristics or, challenges in managing the money that you'd want to avoid? Because the only reason I ask this, it's kind of like you're focusing on the negative, But I just want some of the listeners to realize, hey, maybe I'm doing something that I need to adjust. You know, so what would that be? What would be something that's a hard no for you, that you'd look at somebody you're hiring and be like, no, thank you, based on characteristics, behaviors, more so than a strategy?
Being really prideful, not accepting that, you know, not getting out of losers because your idealistic, you know, world view of the markets is bigger than the markets. No, it's not. You're going to get destroyed. You are nothing in the scheme of the market. Nothing, no matter how big you really are. So if some hedge fund manager has $50 billion and they're nothing, what, you think you're something with $100,000 in some trading account? No, absolutely not. So understanding, you know, taking out that pride and realizing that, you know, being humble enough to sit there and take a beating and be okay with it, right? So that's the hardest thing in trading. It's funny you say what you said. So coming from the floor of the board of trade, I mean, we would say, similar to what you were saying, George, you know, it's blue collar work and white collar pay. Okay. That's what we'd say, right? Some guy, yeah, it's like, yeah, you know, what does that mean? Well, how do you make the kind of money? Well, you make too much money. How did you make $3 million in a year? These guys, like, well, you know, really, it's a blue collar mentality. A lot of these traders, especially the directional guys, they're very blue collar in terms of their approach. A lot of these guys that have made, you know, really like good plumbers and electrician type guys, you know, that learned the craft of trading. And they were humble in the sense that they could take a beating and they would leave. And again, you wouldn't know if they were up or down, if they had a really good day or really bad day, because they were just the same. They were very even keel. They weren't emotionally high or low. They could stay in the middle. And again,
love it.
Very easy to say, very hard to do. Okay,
yeah.
How do you do that now? Meditation, exercise, eat the right foods. All this stuff matters. People say, oh, it doesn't matter. No, it does matter. Your mind has to be clear. If you want to be a good trader, you can't have a lot of baggage in your mind relating to whatever. Tough relationship, maybe you're in a bad marriage, maybe girlfriend, boyfriend problems, other family problems, children problems, whatever they are. If you think you're going to be good at trading, you better get rid of that baggage. You have to make it in trading, because that's how hard it is. So all those things are that's the mental side of it. And if you can do that, you can be okay. But you cannot be prideful and think you're bigger than the market. At the end of the day, I can tell you whatever I want to say about the S&P. Hey, S&P, I think should be trading 2,500 right now. Well, Brad, it closed at 2,900. Well, what does that mean? It means I'm wrong, and it means I'm wrong big. And if I can't accept that, then I'm going to take a beating. That's just a fact.
Yeah. So Brad, you just mentioned, I'd written it down here, you know, the mental aspect of trading. And you kind of mentioned something important that I think we can kind of discuss a little bit more in detail with regards to, you know, you shouldn't really be trading if you've had, you know, an argument with your spouse, you haven't had, you know, your time to meditate, clear your head, et cetera. Can you kind of speak on that part from the professional trader's aspect with regards to, you know, maintaining and protecting your mental capital, as well as your, you know, obviously as traders, it's our goal to protect capital and to grow it. But can you speak on maybe the mental aspect and how traders can grow their mental toughness so that they can, you know, they can survive in these markets?
Yeah, I would say the first thing I would just is to put a routine in place. I think a routine is very important. Whatever it is, get up. I mean, listen, exercise and eating healthy, I think are, you know, the routine, exercise, eating healthy. So however you want to put that together, I would say those kind of three things are a good place to start. Listen, with this coronavirus and everybody's at home, I mean, listen, people are drinking more, eating more. I mean, I've picked up a couple pounds and I'm like a health conscious and I work out because I've been lazy, I admit. But in my mind, I'm still like, you know, it's funny. I woke up this morning. I was like, I'm going to take a little jog today. And just, you know, because I have been, but you just don't lose that edge. And if you don't have it, start to pull it into your life, right? Put that routine in. It's simple. I mean, habits happen, right? It's been proven, right? Like you got to do things for a few weeks to create a habit. You know, and I think that's a good way to do it in these markets. I think with trading, you need to have it because we've already talked about how hard it is. You know, I think the biggest thing is people underestimate how hard trading is and how hard it is to make money. I think it's very, very difficult. And I come from a place where it's pros. I've seen the best of the best, and the best of the best say it's hard. So if they say it's hard, then gosh, it's got to be hard, right?
Yeah, exactly. You also mentioned the aspect of meditation. And I think that's super big, because not a lot of people, you know, when you mention meditating, a lot of people kind of brush it off as fluff. But the fact that, you know, you mentioned as well that this is a hard industry, man. This is a really difficult industry to succeed in. And I think meditation kind of opens up, you know, it allows you to kind of visualize having a good day. So I guess my question to you is, you know, is there any sort of meditation that, you know, you kind of get into before the trading session? And, you know, if there's any visualizations or anything you can kind of share?
Well, to be clear, I mean, there's no active trading for me anymore. I'm looking at markets and, you know, aside from being, you know, long and, you know, stock and bond portfolio, my own passive money, I'm not active in that way. I'm active in a sense of what I do with the service and service, you know, having a bunch of people that proprietary trading firms, everybody that uses a service that we provide. But I can tell you what I do, and I can answer that for people that are trading. And again, this is me and my bias. I have a big fishing background. So I have a, you know, technical fishing background where I largemouth and smallmouth bass and using artificial lures and all this stuff that I've done for a long time. But it can be that, or it can be anything else. So for me, it's fishing, but for everybody, to each his own. What I do is I visualize. So every day I kind of will sit back and I, you know, take my, just a few minutes is really it is, to just pull yourself away from the world that you're in and have this visualization of something that brings you to a calm place. Okay. For me, it's like I said, I'll think about some lake I fished, or it could be saltwater or freshwater. It could be throwing a fly in Montana. It could be, you name it. I mean, it could be anything. And I, you know, take my mind there. And when I come back, I'm pretty relaxed. And it helps me. I think it's that visualization. I think that's really what meditation is for me. And I know by definition, maybe people could, you know, describe it differently, but that's, I think if people do that, it's a wonderful thing. It brings you to a kind of a calm spot. And I think it's good to do that early in the morning. And then if you can do that midday, right? In trading, do it early before, and then a midday, and then go from there.
I really like the part, Brad, that you mentioned. So it sounds like you have a reset switch. So, I mean, I know now that you're not as active in your trading other than your own personal portfolio management, et cetera. So I'm sure you still use that reset switch to this day when you encounter any kind of challenges. And I would also challenge the trader listening to this podcast to find your own reset switch, because what ends up happening is that I find from our experience and educated traders, disaster happens when you get to that edge of what's acceptable and then you cross it. You have no way of keeping yourself back to like what's required, you know, being disciplined, focused, patient. I think more losses occur just outside of that edge, and then the emotional trading happens. And then that's how you finish a session. You're like, holy crap, 80% of these trades, I don't know who did, but it wasn't me. And the reason being is because you gravitate so far away from the center of the core where you're balanced and you're performing optimally that, you know, and if you don't have a reset switch, once you cross that boundary, nothing good happens. And so it's not about making more money. It's about losing less and finding a way to have that reset. For me, I like to meditate as well. I meditate every single morning, and it's very important to me because honestly, if you look at traders who tend to be successful, Brad, I'm sure you can vouch for this, in prop firms back in the day, when in the heyday, a lot of them were hired in performance. You know, athletics, superior athletes make really good traders, you know, poker players, people that manage risk and also are high, understand the dynamic of high performance in any other mindset. And I think that's important. And I love that you shared the fact that your visualization going back to, you know, being on the fishing boat, going through that process is relaxing to you. So I would challenge every trader listening to find one thing that could be their reset, right? A visualization or a simple procedure, any small short routine that resets your mind. Because personally, I've gotten the most trouble when there came a moment where I know I'm about to lose it. You know, you're like, here we go. You're kind of like skirting around the track. You're losing traction.
So in trading, right, you're in a bad trade. It's not working. You need to get out. You know, it's like if you don't have something that tells you that, you know, you upset stomach, you know, you feel like you're like, ooh, this isn't right, right? It's just, it's that whole thing where if you never have any type of nothing that indicates, nothing internally that indicates, wow, this is wrong, what happens is you don't get out. And like I said, I mean, the key thing for everybody trading, man, you just have to, it's so humbling, but you just got to be able to take losses and get out. I mean, if you have, you know, if you know what you're doing, you're going to find, you'll find your winners. You just need to understand that you can't directionally trade and not take losses. I mean, it's just not possible. You could develop a system to be, you know, tight money management, and you could define, there's an edge. You can have a defined edge and make money. You just got to be systematic in terms of getting out, and you got to be able to be humble enough to take your losses. Easy to say, hard to do. I get it. But you got to do it, and you will become a better trader if you do it. I promise you. You'll become better. You just got to do it.
It's a very interesting industry that we're in, because you're always, I like to use the car analogy, you're always on the edge of how much grip you're getting versus how fast you're going through the corner, right? The racing analogy. So it's like when you find you're skirting a little bit, sliding, you got to let off the gas slightly, you know, reassess and then power through and you get the traction. So I love this. We had some phenomenal discussion this episode. I could honestly talk to you, Brad, for hours at a time. Sometimes we do.
That's nice. I appreciate it, guys. It's good talking to you guys. You guys are good guys, and I think you're doing good stuff for a lot of people, trying to teach people, you know, the right habits, and it's wonderful. There's not enough people like you, I think, in trading, because you don't come from, there's no more, you know, the trading floor and all the stuff, that stuff you could seek out from young Brad, what I was doing, that doesn't exist. That platform doesn't exist anymore. So where do people go to learn? You know, there has to be outlets like what you guys do to learn how to trade, or you're going to have, you know, you're going to have bad fundamentals. And if you have bad fundamentals, you're not going to make it in this business.
Thank you. I appreciate that, those words. And, you know, that's all we try to do. We try to help people build a good foundation so everything else is sturdy on top. So I'd like to finish off the episode by moving into News Squawk. It's a service that I could tell you is, you know how there's like essential jobs with this COVID-19, like a nurse and all that?
Yep.
I think the News Squawk is an essential service for me to trade. I think
it's nice of you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. And I think without it, I'd be lost in the dark. So I'd like it if you could tell us a little bit about, you know, your involvement with it, what it is, and the advantages of it as well.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So yeah, 13 years ago, I started to consult to the business. And like I said, as of November 2019, I became a shareholder in the business. We're, you know, rebranding and renaming from Rand Squawk to New Squawk. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, our service has been popular in, you know, professional trading, proprietary trading, banks, hedge funds, people that, certainly trade professionally for a living. The CEO of the business that's in London, Mahel Patel, I think directionally taking the business where we're really trying to give access to, you know, more people and, you know, really working on a price that's going to be able to kind of fit for, when I say a non-pro, I think it's a really great world. I think it's interesting is that when you have retail self-directed people and someone that trades at a proprietary trading firm or a hedge fund or a bank, they're really, to me, you know, there are people at home that are really, really talented traders, and I've seen this transition. So someone that could be considered retail, I would say, hey, this person, hey, take a look what they're doing. This is a pro to me, because look at the kind of money they make and the type of trader they are. I mean, just because you're at, so I've made this point that my view is that, hey, we need more and more people. People need access to our service that are more self-directed. And so we've continued to, you know, I think we're going to continue to push that way. And you know, especially in volatile markets, like when it's volatile now, you know, our price point of where we are, right? So we're that $150 to $300 a month, depending on the license. But, you know, it's easily to justify if you're trading active at all in this kind of volatility, where to pay that price, where in a 14 VIX, if you're paying $250 a month in that environment, I think professional traders can justify that, but harder for people that, you know, aren't trading as much. But you know, in general, yeah, we look at, you know, we have a full, you know, we have a desk in London that, you know, looks like a trading desk, but there's just, it's all analysts, and we're around the clock. So we're European, US, and Asia Pac trading session for the past 13 years, right? It's been covered. We've become eyes and ears for people. So we take out 95% of the crap, okay? And not that to talk bad about CNBC because there's good stuff that they've done and they're doing. But there's, you know, we give you 5% that if you're looking in terms of stuff that can move markets, that's the stuff that we talk about. You hear it to the ear. You can focus on your screens. You get to hear it to the ear. And, you know, that's what we do. You're covered. You're not in a vacuum trading at home, because if you really are being active intraday and you're looking at CNBC and you don't have like a service like ours in your area, I mean, you're definitely, you know, people that are listening to our service have an edge over you. There's no question about it.
That's amazing, man. And a few things I want to mention about News Squad, because, you know, I use it daily, and we all of us do, and the team, including a lot of the members in our trading room. And I'll say this about the membership. I find it very interesting that if you listen to a channel like CNBC, obviously not knocking them, but it seems to be more tailored towards entertainment, right? And you're getting people's opinion who may or may not be doing the same thing as you. What I like about News Squawk is that it strips the opinion. It gives you the vital information tailored to a way that a trader listening to it would understand quickly. At the end of the day, when news drops, you got two things you could do. Read the news and miss the trade, or listen to the news as you do the trade. And I think for shorter term day traders, there's tremendous value. But as I've sort of explored the platform a little bit more myself, Brad, I'm finding things I never knew existed in there. Like, I love those reports that you guys do, pre-market, post-market. I love earnings calendar. You guys have a wealth of research that I think even an investor who isn't a day trader has a lot of wealth of value there, because at the end of the day, I think that the product you guys put out isn't a cost and investment. I've paid for my newswire from your analysts. You know, tell them thank you, by the way. I've paid the subscription many times over. Nice, yeah, in single days. So I think there's value in it to more than just the active trader, to the investor. Those circulars are super important. And I love what you guys do. And I thank you for, you know, first of all, motivating the team and continuing to do what you guys do, because you help me immensely. And the ability to chat to your analysts as well. I think people don't realize how valuable that is. You know, it's been super, super effective for me. So, you know, awesome work at News Squawk. I love it. I always use it. And, you know, actually, it's the number one recommended News Squawk on TradePro. So we had a...
I appreciate that, George.
Like a list. And, you know, you guys are a go-to. So I appreciate it.
I appreciate that. I'll tell the analyst team they like to hear that, because, you know, the trading crowd that we provide information to, you know, they can get mad really quick, but then they're like, but I'm like, come on, you know, and I know some of these people that, you know, I'm like, you get mad. Oh, they missed this one thing one time. You know, how about all the, oh, well, yeah, you're right, Brad. I mean, you've been a client for 10 years. You know, you've done pretty well. No, you're right. You're right. I mean, well, have we paid for, you know, how do you justify what you've paid for us? Well, oh yeah, I guess you have. Now you think about it, Brad, it's been paid over, you know, 100 times over you've been on your investment. Well, thanks. Can I tell my analyst that? Yeah, I guess you can. But in the meantime, piss off, because I'm a mean trader, right? It's like the trading crowd is like, you know, they don't want to, and it's nice to hear that. And I have to tell the analyst team, because it's like talking about people that just don't get credit and have done this for, again, around the clock, 13 years, no time off. I mean, you don't realize how tough that job is. And they've done a great job, and it's great. You know, it's great to have the morale where it is right now. And I think we're doing a wonderful job, and, you know, we're a small business and we grind away like everybody else. And, we want to add value. And if we're not adding value, you know, I'm not, you know, I wouldn't want you to have the service. But I think, to your point, yeah, CNBC and this stuff, you got to be careful. You start looking at that stuff. You're right. It's a lot of opinions, a lot of entertainment. And if you're trading actively, it's almost like you don't want that. You want a service like ours, and you kind of want to not have, or if you have CNBC on, just have it where it's turned off, listen to us, have CNBC muted, and if something crazy happens and we pick up something and we start talking about something that's really creating a lot of volatility, fine, you can start to, like, you can look at CNBC while it's muted to see if they're breaking some other, you know, some things that could be interesting. But I do believe that it's distracting, and it's something I would never in my life, in terms of trading, ever want, you know, CNBC, listening to CNBC while I'm trading. I would always use a professional service like ours that's filtering for me, because I don't want to hear the noise.
Absolutely.
The noise is not doing anything for me. And that's what I tell to people that are actively trading. You want to get rid of the noise. The noise will hurt you, not help you.
Absolutely, man. It can outright distract you. It'll lead to a lot of disaster situations. So anyway, I'm super happy with the service. And you know, you got to remember that the service is interesting because where there's money, there's emotion. So the people who you know have the negative feedback once in a while, I think it's just in the heat of the moment that you know. But to me, overall, is a net. You guys have done a fantastic job, and I always pop them a little comment, sending them love, joy, and happiness here and there to kind of keep them.
That's nice. I want more people like you, George. We need more people like you. Yeah, that's for sure. And You know, it's tough. It's a tough world. But that's welcome to the business of trading, and you know, that's just what it is. And I understand that. You know, because every day isn't perfect. I tell you, every day isn't perfect.
Ain't that the truth? Well, thanks so much for coming on the podcast, Brad. I had a really great discussion with you, and I'm sure Mark did as well.
Yeah, really, Brad, it's been an absolute pleasure.
But a pleasure with both you guys, George, Mark. I appreciate it, and I appreciate your time, and I hope this helps people out. And we're gonna get through this virus, and we're all gonna come out on the other side.
Awesome, brother. Same to you. Love, joy, and happiness to you and the team. And for anyone who's listening to this podcast, look in the description and the show notes. We're gonna provide you some information about New Squawk and how to access the service. Thanks so again, Brad, and have yourself a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Mind Over Market podcast. You can find us at tradeproacademy.com.